Let me tell you about something new.
It's time.
A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is Tuesday, yes, but because we all were kicking back and enjoying our holidays or trying to at least catch up on some rest or whatever, we pushed our usual first Monday topic to today. So it's Mortgage Tuesday. And who else did the slide with us was Jabir Najir from Rajon Mortgage. Good morning, Jabir. How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. How was your weekend, Gresham?
It was good. It was good. You know, just kind of low-key, but it was good. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, and I want to let's say I want to shout out a couple of things before we get started. One, to all my fellow sisters and brothers who enjoy the shorts, people looking at the kind of strength, keep wearing the shorts. It's still officially summer, okay? And I'm taking advantage of every chance I get to wear my shorts. So especially if you are in an area, because I know there's some areas having snow right now. The other thing I want to do is shout out Valencia and all of the colleges right now that are doing the scholar strike to recognize social justice issues and the Black Lives Matter movement. So if you're a part of the scholar strike, thank you for standing up, rising up. And it's, I think, a 48-hour strike. It's today and tomorrow where they're trying to call attention to these issues. So wanted to put that out there. I also want to put out there the fact, and we're going to get started, about refinancing. Because there's something coming up in a couple of months where it may not, it may kind of put you off about refinancing, and that's that little extra fee. I think that's supposed to kick in on the 1st of December, because it was actually, I think, supposed to kick in this month, and I think they put it off. So, Jabir, could you give me some clarification on that?
Yes, yes. So the Federal Housing Finance Agency basically added a half a point refinance fee to all refinances that for anybody that's refinancing with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And this is a charge that they're charging the lenders who are originating these loans. So naturally, the lenders pass this cost down to you. And this is a fee that they are putting in place to offset some of the losses that they have incurred throughout the pandemic and what they expect to incur in the near future due to the pandemic. They're just trying to, I guess, build up some of their reserves that they'll be using to help those who may be having a hard, you know, financial challenges with their mortgage in order to offset that so Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac doesn't actually take a loss. So what does a half a point mean for you? It's not a half a point interest added to your interest rate, but it's a half a point for cost. If anybody's ever really talked in detail about their interest rate and credits and discount points, you'll know what you have is what they call a par rate. And in that rate, there's certain fees that are included in there that give you your 3% or your 3.25 or your 3.5%, whatever rate you may qualify for. Well, what they're actually saying is that they're going to add a half a point fee to that. So say you have a $250,000 loan. That means that your closing costs will cost you an additional $1,200, or $1,250 to be exact. So you can either do one of two things to offset that cost. You can either pay that cost out of pocket, finance it in your loan, or take a slightly higher interest rate to offset that half a point cost. So that is something that you should still have benefits in refinancing based on how far the rates have dropped this year and hopefully will continue to stay low. But you may not receive the same benefit or the dollar-wise if you were to refinance now as opposed to after December. As you just mentioned, that they were supposed to start that in September, but the whole industry was in pretty much uproar whenever it just came out of the blue. Because normally these type of things, we know way ahead of time that in 3 months or 4 months or sometimes even 6 months are going to add certain fees or make certain changes. But this was something that when it initially came out, they said, hey, you know, in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, we're going to have this fee. So it didn't really give lenders a lot of time to adjust. And, you know, so because of that, they actually push it out until December. So the thing is, for a lot of lenders, whenever, you know, they lock the rate, they're actually guaranteeing that rate to you at that cost. And for certain lenders, this was going to cost them millions and millions of dollars because they were not going to deliver those loans to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac before September 1st. And Fannie Mae is saying, hey, any loans you deliver to us after September 1st, you have to pay us this half a point fee. So there are certain lenders that were going to have to pay $40 million, $20 million. There's all kinds of numbers depending on the size of the lender that they had no intention of paying in August, where all of a sudden you get a $40 million bill in September that you didn't expect to get. So, you know, per borrower, yes, that is, you know, definitely money that you want to save. But, yeah, for lenders, that was a very big thing. So, you know, between borrowers making noise and lenders saying, hey, this can't work, they postponed it. But all that to say, if refinance is something that you believe is in your near future, it may be the time to look into it now before that extra fee kicks in.
And I may have missed it when you were talking about, just to be clear, is that fee, is that going to be incorporated as part of the home mortgage, and will you be paying interest on that as well, or is that going to be outside of that and standalone?
Well, the way it will be presented to you, to make it simple for most clients, is you'll just have a higher rate, and that half a point fee is actually included in the rate. But when we look at it on our side, we can see it's itemized. Like when your credit score, your interest rate includes in the interest rate when they put it together, it includes, you know, certain factors such as your credit score, your loan to value. In this case, if you're refinancing, if you're taking cash out, if it's a rate and term. So there's all these costs that are included within the rate, which we never, I mean, if a client asks, then of course we'll deliver it to them. But to simplify it for a client, we just let them know what they qualify for. Because if you see, you know, an interest rate and then you see, I don't know, 7 or 8 line items below that, it may confuse a lot of clients. So normally it will be presented to you in a way of, this is the rate that you qualify for, to simplify things, just like every other bank in the nation. It's just the way that, to simplify things for the consumer. However, it is important for those to know that fee, it will now be included in there. So yes, you may qualify for 2.75 today, and then tomorrow in December it's a 3.125. Because, and it's not necessarily a half a point, and it's a half a point in cost, not half a point in interest rate. So they're charging a half a point, meaning a half a percentage point of your loan amount. So if you have a $100,000 loan, the cost is $500. If you have a $200,000 loan, the cost is $1,000. So if you don't want to pay that fee, including your interest rate, you can say, hey, I just rather pay that fee out of pocket. But the lender will, to prevent you from having to pay that fee out of pocket or increase your loan amount, the lender will give you a credit for it by increasing your interest rate. Just like if anybody's ever purchased a home and they were looking to purchase a home and they qualify for a 3%, but they don't have enough money for the closing costs, the bank will say, hey, if you accept a 3.25, will credit you $3,000 towards your credit, towards your closing costs. And a lot of times clients will take that quarter point higher to get that additional closing cost credit. That way they don't have to come out of pocket for it. So they say, you know what, I'd rather pay the $20 or $30 or $40 extra a month so I don't have to come up with $3,000 out of my pocket now. So not to confuse too much in regards to the interest rates and the credit, but just to simplify for anybody listening is that you will have your qualifying rate, but lenders are always willing to give you a higher rate and if you or give you a credit if you accept a higher rate. In return, if you're willing to pay for a lower rate, they will give you a lower rate than what you qualify for. You just have to pay a premium up front. So you may qualify for a 3%, but if you really want a 2.625, the lender will give you that credit, that interest rate. You just have to pay a premium up front. That may be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, depending on your scenario, up front to get that 2.625.
Okay. All righty. Well,
yeah, I know it's a lot. I try to keep it as simple as possible, but there is an extra fee in there, and there are different ways to offset it. And regardless of how your lender presents it to you, it is a fee that they have to pay, so they're going to pass it down to you one way or another, either in the interest rate or charging you up front.
Yeah. Well,
but it has to be paid, so. You know,
yeah,
no,
yeah, it's a pain for, seems like a pain all the way around, you, me, everybody. But I did want to make people aware. And so, like, I guess one of my last questions before we go to break is, so is this something that if you have not closed by that date that you get, that it gets tacked on, or if it's that you started after that date that it gets tacked on. Like if I started my refinance process today, but for some crazy reason it has not finished by the time this date rolls around, does that extra money, does that kick in then, or is it that it's at those people that decide to refinance after that particular date?
Well, that's the interesting thing with the way that this particular guideline is worded, because it says delivered to Fannie Mae before, you know, after that date. So normally they normally do it by the application date. So they'll say, okay, as long if you apply by December 1st, but the loan was delivered to Fannie Mae by, you know, February 1st, for example, that lets you know you have 2 whole months to get it done from the time that you apply, as long as you apply by December 1st. The different thing about this rule is it says delivered. So that leads me to believe that if you get too close to that December date, that lenders are going to automatically start tacking on this half a point.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if your interest rate maybe expires after that date, the December date, they're going to automatically tack that in, because it's a little more of a timing thing, because you can, and in most cases, you hope that you could close in 30 days, but there are situations that will not allow you to close within 30 days, and now it becomes a race against time. So, I mean, the best thing I would really suggest is for somebody, you know, at the very least, at least start your process in October. That way, if you close by end of November, considering that, you know, November, you kind of lose, you know, 4 days. I mean, really, supposed to be 2 days for Thanksgiving, but this always ends up, you end up losing, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then sometimes, you know, the Monday is a slow start. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just always like that in November, so you don't really want to play around with trying to push all the way to the limit to close on that last day of the month. But if anybody's looking to refinance, I would definitely suggest that they start at least in October.
And we just did, and goodness gracious, it was so worth it, because we had a ridiculously high rate, and we dropped almost 3.
That's great. Yeah, definitely a lot of opportunity for people to take advantage of of the refinancing, I've read that on average, the average homeowner is able to save approximately $278 per month. And there's approximately, I think they said either 17 or 19, I don't remember, 17 or 19 million households in the United States are not taking advantage of the refinances right now. Like, everybody knows that rates are low, where people are just not simply calling in or taking advantage of these savings for whatever their reasons may be, or they just keep putting it off until tomorrow. A lot of times we just procrastinate and say, hey, I'm going to call tomorrow, I'm going to call tomorrow, before you know it's 6 months later. But yeah, they suspect that there's about, I think it was either 17 or 19 million people that aren't taking advantage of $300 a month savings. And in some cases, we're saving people more.
But I have to say, though, you know, it just depends sometimes in terms of how things shake out, because the person I called, I had called in January and, you know, and got information, and then we ended up putting it off, and then I called again, and the rates had even gone down even more. Not saying that that's going to happen, y'all, you know, and the rates were good in January, but it was it just ended up the way it shook out. It's just, you know, we finally said, okay, let's go ahead and do this, and we, you know, 6 months down the road, call back, and it's like, oh, yeah, we can do better than that. So it's like, cool, you know.
Yeah,
and
actually,
the one,
Go ahead. No, I was going to say there's a client, very similar situation that you just mentioned. He called his bank in, I think it was January or February, and he put it off just for whatever reason. He just just never got around to it. And as he called his bank back, a family member told him to give me a call. And then, you know, I had a rate that was much lower, and he was just saying the same thing you said, that it's just funny the way things worked out, because he was ready to move forward with it at the beginning of the year. He just procrastinated and just didn't get everything in, and things worked out for him, because, you know, now he's getting a very low, a much lower rate than he would have got in January, February. And the rates that at the beginning of the year were good, but he's getting an even better rate now.
Yeah. And the one thing too, okay, but go ahead,
But I was gonna say, but one of the big things for everybody to keep in mind, that one of the many factors that helped to push these rates down is the pandemic. So, like you just mentioned, for other people not to necessarily wait on rates to drop a whole another point, because unless we're expecting another pandemic to come across on top of the one that we're still in, then, you know, now you're gambling at this point, you know.
Yeah. And I can't really say, you know, how much, I guess I'm pretty sure the pandemic must have played a role, but, I mean, it wasn't even in my line of thinking when I, you know, was first trying to do this. I mean, it wasn't even, I don't think, in the news when we first looked at it. And then even when I went back, I wasn't even thinking about that. All I was thinking about is, like, you know, for us, it's like, okay, you know, retirement's coming sooner and sooner and quicker and quicker. We need to do something. Just get these payments down. And that was the only thing. Because I know one of the things you had mentioned was people who maybe were getting them to get cash back to do, you know, repairs on their home. And that's, you know, good too. But at the same time, we were like, no, let's just lower the monthly payment. So, and, you know, we'll just fix as we go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We are here with Jabir Najeer, and we've moved Mortgage Monday to Tuesday because of the holiday. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Okay, we're going to continue. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is Mortgage Monday on Tuesday. Usually it's the first Monday of the month, but because we were just chilling the last official summer holiday, we still wanted to cover what was going on. So we have Jabir Najeer with Rajon Mortgage on with us today. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. So, you know, yeah, we're seeing a lot of these, you know, refinances that are going on. And something that you kind of mentioned earlier when we were getting into the discussion, but I think for some people, I think they need some clarification. And so I'm going to ask you to do that. Fannie, Freddie, FHA, can we kind of clarify the differences in all of these?
Sure. So each program, well, your Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are what you normally would consider your conventional loan program. So I shouldn't say what you would normally, that when you hear anybody mention conventional financing,
mm-hmm.
that is through either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Those are two different agencies that offer conventional financing. They do have some very, very small differences in between them, but for the most part, they kind of mirror each other when it comes to their guidelines and how they operate. Two different systems, but very similar in regards to their operation. And they pretty much guarantee the loans for the bank. So once the bank actually finances a loan using Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac's guidelines, they have to deliver
mm-hmm.
that loan to those agencies, and those agencies guarantee the funds, and then there's normally another servicer who actually services those loans. Now, the Federal Housing Administration is, or more so commonly known as FHA, is a totally different agency that has a lot more lenient guidelines, and they operate underneath a totally different set of guidelines than Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And the FHA actually insures the loan for the banks. So they're not necessarily guaranteeing or buying the loans like Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. But once
okay.
a lender actually originates a FHA loan, they do deliver that loan to FHA because FHA does need to insure it. So that insures it for the lender, but the lender is actually still servicing that loan. That's their loan that they actually lent on. So if they're, and that's why you pay a FHA upfront mortgage insurance, and you pay a monthly mortgage insurance, because that insurance is very similar to your home insurance, but it's just for the mortgage. That if anything were to happen where you were to go delinquent on that mortgage, and that
mm-hmm.
insurance is actually what insures the lender that they will get back the majority, if not all, of their money that they lose throughout the foreclosure process. Now, the reason why somebody may go with the FHA loan over a conventional loan is because FHA is a lot more lenient. They allow you to go to a higher debt-income ratio, which is basically
mm-hmm.
the amount of income that goes towards paying your debts on credit. So with conventional financing, it's maxed out at 50% of your income. So just to make things simple, if you make $4,000 a month, all your debt on credit, including car payments, your new mortgage, credit cards, cannot be more than $2,000 a month. Where FHA will allow you to go up to 55% debt-to-income ratio. So that will allow you to go – that means that if you make $4,000 a month, your income can be – your debt could be up to $2,200 a month. So
mm-hmm.
depending on what home you're looking for, that extra 5% – and I say 55, but it's actually like 56.99%, but just – you know, usually just to make things simple, we just say 55. Sometimes you're not able to qualify for a home with conventional finance because of your debt-to-income ratio, we could actually go FHA and qualify for that home. But there is the upfront mortgage insurance premium and monthly, which conventional financing does not have the upfront mortgage insurance premium. And just for anybody listening, just in case you're not familiar with that, say you will just use $200,000. With conventional financing, if you borrow if you are looking for a loan of $200,000, that's what you'd be paying on. But with FHA financing, they have a 1.75% mortgage insurance premium that's added to that. So if you're borrowing $200,000, they're going to add an upfront premium of $3,500. And that's financed over the course of 30 years. That is money that they are collecting on. If you borrow the money in September and you win the lottery, you pay the mortgage off in October, even though you didn't use the mortgage insurance, that is still money that you still guaranteed to them. So you still have to pay that $3,500. But although it's not a prepayment penalty, it's definitely much different than a prepayment penalty. It's just a cost that you didn't pay up front. They financed it in the loan, and even if you didn't use it, it's still something that they essentially sold to you to be used, even though you didn't have a need for it. So if you have a loan amount of $200,000, they're going to add that $3,500 on it. So you would actually owe $203,500. With conventional financing, they don't have that. However, with conventional financing, if you put down less than 20%, you will have mortgage insurance just like you do with FHA. However, with conventional financing, there's a lot more variables when it comes to that mortgage insurance. Mm-hmm. So you could, in many cases, actually pay less in mortgage insurance than you do with FHA. However, there are some cases, if you don't have the credit score, that you could possibly pay more than FHA. But why would somebody go with conventional instead? Well, if you have the higher interest, if you have the higher credit score, then the interest rates would actually, in many cases, be lower than FHA, if not the same rate as FHA. And it makes more sense to take that option as opposed to paying the upfront mortgage insurance with FHA. If you have 20% equity or more in the property, you don't have to pay the monthly mortgage insurance. So there are cases that, let's just say that FHA, you qualify for 2.875. Conventionally, you qualify for 3.125. Many times the payment on the 3.125 will be lower for two reasons. You don't have that higher loan amount because of the upfront mortgage insurance premium, and you don't have the monthly mortgage insurance premium. So sometimes It's not so big to get caught so much on the interest rate, because sometimes the interest rate doesn't tell the full story. For example, the mortgage insurance, that is a fee that you don't include in your rate, but it is a fee that you pay monthly. So if you can take a higher interest rate and have a lower payment, it makes a lot more sense than really pushing for that lower interest rate by having this extra fee that really will cost you more over the course of your loan.
Okay. And the reason I was asking, because I also, too, I guess wanted to kind of get more of an idea in terms of how much the government was involved in each of these types of mortgages, but you helped give a little bit of clarity to that, so really appreciate that. No, go ahead.
No problem. Even though the government they're trying to privatize Fannie and Freddie. We say Fannie and Freddie a lot in the industry, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Right.
So I think that gets away from it's lending. So the government always have a hand in it, but I think that they may not be able to regulate as much as they can, or may not be in the details as much if and when it goes private. Yeah,
now,
so that means that it will be – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah, when, if that happens and when it happens, which I know that there's a push to that, because a long time ago during the recession, the government took over control over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really a publicly owned, I guess you could say, company, or, you know, as far as government owned. But if it goes private, then – that is a concern that a lot of people have, because that could possibly cause those loans to become more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, because then there's fees and digital fees to make it more profitable. But then on the flip side of it, they could make things a little bit more lenient to allow people to get into loans easier, which sounds great, but then you also don't want to be too lenient where it causes a housing issue like we had before. So
right. Definitely don't want that.
There's two sides of it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, maybe, I don't know how much I should say about this, but one of the things that I found that we kind of got a break on is the whole appraisal thing, where, and I don't know if they just didn't do an appraisal or they just didn't charge us an appraisal fee, is that that type of leniency happening in a lot of the refinance cases?
In a lot, yes, but not always. So it's a little bit of a luck of the draw when it comes to that. So we have a system that every single bank, if you do FHA, FHA too, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loans, there's a system for Freddie Mac is called Loan Prospector. For Fannie Mae is called Desktop Originator or Desktop Underwriter. And basically, we import your file out of our loan origination software into their system, and it basically reads everything. It reads your income, it reads your assets, it reads the details of your credit report, because when we pull credit, there's a reference number that we input into Fannie Mae, so it's reading everything in a matter of seconds, your whole history, and it spits out an approval. But in that approval, which is very important for even loan officers, because I do hear people not reading the approval in detail. They just see the top says approved eligible and they move on. But the details of that will let you know if an appraisal is actually needed. And many times, especially for those who have a decent amount of equity in their property, the appraisal is not needed. You get what they call a property inspection waiver, which means that Fannie Mae, based on the information they pulled on your property, they don't. And usually it's for those who have a decent amount of equity in their property. Like if you have 5% equity, I'm not saying it's never, but I personally have never seen somebody with 5% equity get an appraisal waiver. But normally if you have a decent amount of equity in your property and you have strong credit on top of that, then you'll get an appraisal waiver, which means that they're just basing it based off of the information on the numbers that we put in the system for what your property should be worth. So we do have to put an estimate in the system what the property should be worth. And if you put in the system, and the thing is that's also where it comes into having a good loan officer, because say that you think that your property is worth 275, for example. I'm just throwing out a number. They put 275 in there. The system says that you need to get an appraisal. But if you really mess with the numbers, because sometimes you're wondering like, wow, well, there's enough equity in there. Why didn't they get a property inspection waiver? And just by sometimes, and this just recently happened to me recently, just by lowering what the estimated value is in the system, you drop it by $5,000. Now all of a sudden you get a property inspection waiver, especially if you're not trying to max out cash out or, you're just trying to do a rate and term refinance. Then why even worry with trying to get the max value in the system so the system recognizes it? Because the system is just saying, hey, I don't think there's a chance that property may not be worth $275. We need to get an appraisal to validate the value, to confirm the value. But if your loan is going to be the same loan at $270, then just put the estimate for $270 and get the waiver. So it doesn't work for everybody, because I've had – two very similar clients before as far as the equity in their property, even almost to their credit profile, and one person gets the inspection waiver and the other person doesn't. And no matter how much I play with the numbers, I can't get the inspection waiver for them. So it just kind of depends on multiple factors. But if you have a decent amount of equity in your property, then there is a chance that you should be able to get the inspection waiver.
So
it saves you money. It saves you, quite a bit of money.
Oh, yeah. It does. I'm very grateful. The other thing I wanted to ask you, too, okay, so we know it's either tomorrow or Thursday, but around this time of year, especially in our area, is the peak, per se, in terms of the hurricane season. This is when a lot of the hurricanes happen. Usually Irma happens around this time of year. I think it was on the 10th. And so does anything change usually around this time of year when people are considering applying for either a new mortgage or a refi?
Nothing really changes when it comes to the underwriting process. The one thing that we do have to be mindful of when the hurricanes are coming, because say mm-hmm. that you get an appraisal on Monday, and then mm-hmm. a hurricane comes in through your city on Friday. Well, once a hurricane passes, they have to get what they call a reinspection, basically to make sure that there was nothing that, you know, no destruction to your home due to the hurricane. And mm-hmm. that will cost you another $150 to almost $200. So it's just important for everybody to be mindful, because if you know that you're not going to close by before the hurricane comes in, then I would just postpone the appraisal for a week and do it as early as possible so that we can get on their schedule, because you don't want to wait until after the hurricane passes where there's the appraisal schedule fills up. Try and get on the schedule as early as possible to come out after the hurricane passes. That way it does save you money. And then in addition to that, there's this imaginary box. So both the mortgage company and the insurance companies use it. So there are cases
right.
where there's sometimes clients may have literally said, hey, the only thing I do is blow off my driveway. There's a lot of leaves on my driveway, but there were not even a broken branch in any of the trees in the neighborhood. And mm-hmm. within the hurricane, just didn't really come through their side of the state. But mm-hmm. if you're in this imaginary box, the lender can still say, hey, we needed a reinspection. And I totally understand from the client's standpoint, because it's almost like a waste of $200. Because,
yeah.
you know, all they really got was heavy rains and winds, and they just had to blow off their driveway in the morning. Where, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't have any roof leaks, they didn't have any broken branches, but, you know, it's just important for your loan officer to be aware if you will be in that box. But the same thing comes with insurance, where it's just important to bind that policy before the hurricane gets within that imaginary box. And that imaginary box can actually, the hurricane can actually be in the imaginary box days before it hits the state. Like, for example, if a hurricane is set to hit the state on Friday, it may be in the imaginary box as early as that Monday, like week.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't there like a 10-day period, something like that? I could be wrong.
It's not necessarily a day period. It's just this box. So,
okay.
you know, and – yeah, so I don't really want to say it's days, because depending on how fast the hurricane is moving, that can make one hurricane literally be, you know, a couple miles offshore, but it's not hitting for 10 days, where another one
right.
is way further out, but it's moving at a faster speed. So it's just like this imaginary box that they have. Once it gets inside that box, it doesn't matter if you're 30 days away or 4 hours away. Once it hits that box, it's
mm-hmm.
basic insurance is locked down, and usually – on our side, once one insurance company, say one insurance company shuts down at 10 o'clock, you have a couple hour window to bind that policy, because basically it's almost like a domino effect. One insurance company after another insurance company after another insurance company starts to shut down. You'll be lucky to find an insurance company still binding insurance 24 hours after the first one shuts down. It's just how it goes. But another thing I would also suggest is that, especially for those who are already homeowners refinancing and have new insurance, just go
mm-hmm.
ahead and send that check out. They should not try to find a way around paying out on policy in case you do have damage to your home. But
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, it's money that the insurance company do not want to pay out. They want to take your $1,000 or your $1,500 or your $3,000, how much you pay a year for insurance. But once you have damage and the damage is $60,000 or $70,000, they're going to find a way, if they can, not to pay out the maximum, or say, hey, yes, you did buy the insurance, but you didn't send out the payment until after the hurricane. So,
yeah.
you know, and most likely in most cases, you probably will beat them, but you just have to go through the court process. Plus, I do
mm-hmm.
really want to spend all that money getting
no.
attorneys involved if you don't really have to. So
no.
just send that check out to hopefully next day
not.
To them. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, the bare minimum, try and get it postmarked in the mail before the hurricane hits. Because
and the other
once
thing,
you...
the other thing I was going to say real quick, and, you know, and I know we're kind of getting a little bit off of the mortgage subject, but
just to remind homeowners and future homeowners is, you know, one of the things that is that's a big issue that comes up when you're trying to get insurance or you're trying to renew insurance is the roof age and whether or not it has damage. And it's not just the hurricanes you got to think of. We had unexpectedly a couple of weeks some hail. Not ever, you know, and we had never seen any, although we knew in the past, I think before we purchased our house, it may have been some hail damage. But the thing about it with the damage or even the age of the roof, if it's, was it 20 years old or coming up on 20 years old, your insurance may either go higher from what I understand or even may not be able to be renewed or you may not be able to get a policy until the roof has been replaced. So this is for home owners as well as home buyers. They need to be aware that, that the roof age or the roof condition is critical when it comes to being able to get insurance. And if you're trying to purchase or refinance that, and you end up having an inspection or something, I'm thinking that could delay the process as well, right?
Yes. So generally speaking, whenever you get within that 2 year to 3 year, because every roof has a life expectancy, usually anywhere between 20 to 25 years. So once mm-hmm. the appraiser goes there or inspector, they will normally state how many years are left on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes time to get insurance, the insurance company is always going to look into the property records to state to see whenever the last time the roof was replaced. And if they see the last time, we're in 2020, if they see that the roof was replaced in 1996, they're going to basically tell you that they can't, or even in 2000, they're going to say that they can't get you insurance. You have to get a new roof. Now, there are certain policies that will, like a builder's risk insurance, that will allow you to get insurance, but it really limits the coverage. Number one, it's super expensive. It's like $2,500 for like 6 months. It could be very expensive, but that insurance is put in place just to allow you to get into the home and replace the roof and get better insurance. So yes, there are ways around it to get into the home, but you know, you're probably going to pay two or three times the amount that you normally would have for insurance. Just to get a policy. So whenever you're purchasing a home, it's just very important to know what the age of the roof is and how many years is left. Because anytime you get within that 2 to 3 year range, it's very, very hard to get insurance. For the lender, they're going to go off of whatever the appraiser and make sure the insurance is able. You're able to get insurance on the home because the lender is supposed to make sure that you have insurance to cover the home in case there's damage to the roof, but the insurance companies are going to say, hey, you're at very high risk of roof damage. If there's a big storm, you're considered high risk, so we don't want to insure you. So, definitely one of the things that you really want to be aware of is the age of the roof.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyway, I know we've kept going. We haven't done any breaks, but we've been having some technical difficulties, so we wanted to continue through while we had Jabir. And if you have questions, we're on for another 2 minutes. The number is 516-387-1944. So, we are going to take a very quick break. The number, like I said, is 516-387-1944. We are here with Jabir Najir of Rajan Mortgage. Mortgage Monday on Tuesday. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arglitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Moved Mortgage Monday to Tuesday because of the wonderful holiday we were blessed to have. And we have Jabir Nadir of Ryajan Mortgage on with us. The number, if you have questions in the next few minutes, is 516-387-1944. And so we really haven't gotten into the rates that much. We're under 3 in some cases. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. So with FHA, in most cases, you should be underneath a 3. If not a 3, you should be in the very, very low 3s, 3%, 3.125. But the average right now is about a 2.625. With
wow.
conventional financing, 2.85 would be the national average right now. And the main time that you're above that is more so because of score or with conventional financing based on equity. So if you're putting down less money or you're refinancing, don't have the equity in your property, you may be in the low 3.125. But, you know, that's considering with the strong credit and everything. But, yes, in many, many, many cases, you should be underneath that 3% with both FHA and conventional financing.
And a lot of it has to do with timing because even though it dropped for us by the time we got there, it was during the whole time of our process, it was still dropping. And I was like, can we redo this? Can we start over? That's a good question. Can you start over? Can you redo it? What are the penalties or costs involved? Is it a good idea? What's your take on that?
Well, once you close, it's very hard, especially if you close around this year, especially with rates being so low, there's not a very good chance that refinancing again is in your best benefit because every time you refinance, there's additional costs that's included. You have to pay title fees again. You have to pay doc stamps on the mortgage, doc stamps on the deed, not doc stamps on the deed, but intangible tax again, which are basically almost, the best way to put it is almost like a sales tax whenever you have a transaction. The government wants their part as well, too. So a lot of times, if the rates get a little lower, it's not like the rates are a whole point, regardless of when you refinance your home, unless you refinance because you had a lower score and your score is a lot better. But assuming that all things are the same, you may have a quarter point difference, maybe half a point, just depending on what time of the year this year you refinance. And you really may not see that benefit in refinancing in comparison to the closing costs. Now, if you're in the middle of refinancing or financing, the thing is that once you actually lock a rate, that is the agreement between you and the lender that they're going to deliver a rate to you at a certain cost, and you're going to touch a rate at a certain cost. So unless there's a huge drop in the rates, like say you locked in, I'm just going to use this a significant change. Say you locked in at a 4%, then rates drop to a 2.5, then most lenders, if not all lenders, are going to renegotiate that. But when rates drop from a 3% to a 2.875, and our world is not really considered a significant enough drop to renegotiate, because the lenders has already guaranteed the delivery of those funds to their end investor. So the back part of it that nobody ever asked, and we don't really, discuss with clients, is that whenever a rate is locked and the lender doesn't deliver it, like say you cancel your loan, then the lender does have to pay a penalty for it. They don't pass that on to you. It's just a cost of doing business. So the reason I mention that because rates literally change every single day, like sometimes in the middle of the day. So you can only imagine that on our side, you know, the rate that is available at 10 o'clock, we could probably still get you the same rate, but there'd either be a little more of a credit or a little less of a credit because rates just change, you know, throughout the day. So
right.
Those small changes of an eighth of a point or a quarter point, the lenders typically are not going to renegotiate with it because there's already a contract in place, an agreement between you and the lenders so that you accept that rate. So that's usually where it just comes into expertise of the broker to know which way rates are trending and to know if it's worth it to float your rate out for a couple extra days or in certain cases a couple extra weeks before you lock in.
And it's just so hard to tell with this whole pandemic situation and you know, debate on stimulus money and unemployment and all that. It's just really hard to tell.
And definitely not so much over the last couple of weeks or even months, but I just remember when the pandemic first hit and rates were kind of going up and down. And for the overall trend was down, don't get me wrong. But then you had these little small little spikes where you would literally be at your desk working and you go to lunch and, you know, there's a government briefing and news came out while you're at lunch and you come back after lunch and it's not even the same rate that was available once you went to lunch. So what people have to remember is that, you know, the rates are tied to the markets, and as the stock market moves every day, the rates move every day. If right now with the stock market taking a hit, rates improved. Now, if you see that the stock market starts to rally and starts to do very good, you may want to talk to your broker because rates may start to increase a little bit, or the lender credit that you were receiving may not be as great after the stock market rallies. So all these things are really, really tied together, whether it's tied very close together or it's loosely tied together. Everything when it comes to money in America is tied to another market one way or the other. So in most cases, it's not. But a lot of times you get so tied in the rate that if you really do the numbers for certain clients, they may be really, really trying to get that lower rate. And in dollars wise, it ends up working out to like $9 or $11. And I've seen people move to a whole different lender or broker to save, try and save $11 a month. And later, even though they were already saving $300, they're trying to get an additional $11. And by the time they made a switch to the new broker, the rates changed, and now they lost those savings. So, you know, just something to be mindful of. It's a little bit of a gamble.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate you taking the time. We've got to run, but we're going to post your information on Deeds Power, our Facebook page, in case anybody has any questions and needs to get in touch with you. But anyway, thanks a lot, and stay safe, okay?
All right, thank you. All right.
And thank
good.
You
thank
all
you
for listening. Okay. Be well, be safe, be blessed. This has been Deeds Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.